Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Monday, June 24th. I'm Stephen Overly. When you were in school, did you pass paper notes or text with T9? Maybe send Insta DMs? The answer is not just a sign of your age, but the tech that distracted you from whatever the teacher was saying. But more states and school boards say the distractions are now too much, and that smartphones and social media are hurting classroom performance and making cyberbullying and mental illness worse. Last week, the board of the Los Angeles Unified School District voted to ban cell phones and social media starting next year. It's the second largest school district in the country, with over 400,000 students in grades K through 12. And California Governor Gavin Newsom told my colleagues in Sacramento he wants restrictions statewide. California wouldn't even be the first to pass such a law. Florida did that last year, and Indiana followed suit back in April. Antero Garcia thinks these phone bans are not just a bad idea, but that they'll probably fail. He's an associate education professor at Stanford and studies the way students use mobile phones and other technology. But Antero's not just an armchair academic. He also spent 7 years as a high school English teacher in Los Angeles.
To just ban those outright is to ban the place where young people are learning, the places where they're making powerful civic connections with one another, and the places where they might be building up other kinds of identities that schools oftentimes don't value.
On the show today, Antero tells me the real problem is what students are taught, not what's distracting them. Here's our conversation. Antero, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You actually started your career teaching high school English in Los Angeles. What did you think of the school district there moving to ban phones? Are you like, finally, it's about time? Are you like, you know, good luck with that? What are you thinking?
It's definitely more on the good luck with that end of the spectrum, for sure. I think, you know, we're having this conversation in 2024. I have my phone next to me, and it'll probably be blinking intermittently during our conversation with various kinds of updates. So just to recognize that as adults, right, much of our professional and personal life is mediated by phones, and to outright ban them in this year feels like doing our young people a disservice in terms of preparing them for society. I will say also, I think this conversation of banning cell phones is one that is nearly two decades old, right? It's about as old as the conversation of kids having phones somewhat ubiquitously in schools.
Right. I got my first cell phone when I was in middle school. It was not a smartphone. I could probably text on it. That's about it.
Could you play Snake on it?
No, I couldn't. You know, there was no TikTok. There was no, you know, none of this stuff today, which frankly, I'm thankful for. This technology has been around a long time. The things you can use it for has obviously evolved. The way that teens are using it has changed. You know, how did you get from being a classroom teacher into like studying these issues as an academic?
Yeah. So I've been interested broadly in, I think, the ways we oftentimes get educational technology wrong. I think we spend a lot of money investing in technology as if that will somehow make schools better, when we might be better served by investing in teachers and young people. And so that got me interested in things like cell phones. When I was a high school English teacher, again, this was a decade and a half ago when I was conducting this research, I gave my class of ninth grade English students iPod touches at the time, right? It was basically a cell phone without the calling part tied to it.
Right.
And so I tried to explore with my students at the time, right? What can we do with these devices? If we're to take them seriously as objects to support our learning in my English classroom, what could we do? And we developed some English-related games. We edited our school's Wikipedia page. And we did various kinds of activities, right? And there's plenty of distraction. There are plenty of kinds of annoying moments I had as a teacher where we did the kind of cat and mouse thing of, I'm going to catch you with your phone. You're going to put it away. Okay, no, you didn't, right? You have a phone behind your book. All of those kinds of things
right.
That still happen today, happened then. And at the end of the day, right, I was able to empirically, I guess maybe as a useful researcher, identify the ways that kids could be distracted with phones, but also the ways where there's some really powerful affordances that can come out of these. If we were to shift the conversation around what we do with our devices.
Well, I know you wrote a whole book about this, and
yeah.
It sounds like, from what I've read, came away from that thinking at the time that mobile phones were a good addition to the classroom, that there were a lot of benefits. What did you learn in that year of working with your students that kind of surprised you or might surprise people?
Yeah, I think, so I will say we could think of any kind of technology that we might implement or insert into a classroom, be it a cell phone, be it a one-to-one laptop device, be it some kind of generative AI that we might be thinking about right now as we're having this conversation right now. And all of those, we can point to the really powerful ways where those are going to transform learning and be the next great thing. But at the end of the day, I think the thing I would point to is the resiliency of classrooms to remain and look like classrooms, that schools for over a century at this point tend to look like school, right? That our classrooms remain particularly resilient to not changing all that much of if there's cell phones, if there's ChatGPT or whatever the thing is going to be. And so one of the things I learned is if we're serious about using educational technology like a cell phone appropriately in classrooms, we should probably invest in the people who are the central actors in classrooms, right? What does it mean to take teachers seriously? What's it mean to take teacher expertise seriously? And so much of what we're hearing right now, I think, and when I say right now, I mean over the past decade, is teachers being vexed by kids being distracted, by not paying attention to issues of bullying, to all of the kinds of concerns that we oftentimes see around cell phones. But those aren't necessarily tied to the phones, right? Those are tied to kids being distracted by aspects of their social life and being deeply invested in things that are available to them, to their own interests. Are there ways where we might support the teaching profession to think more meaningfully about what we might do with cell phones other than outright banning them?
And so are you still now as much of a proponent of kind of mobile phones in the classroom as you were? You know, I was reading an article that you wrote for Stanford, and this was last year, and there was a quote in there, I'm sure you know the one I'm referring to. It says, you know, it gives me no pleasure to suggest that these tools might be slowly poisoning us. And so, which doesn't sound so pro phone in the classroom. So where is your thinking now?
So there's a couple of thoughts around this. So one thought is the places where our phones are banned, right? The places where I can't, you know, look at my phone right now, if my wife were to send me an update about our kids, or if I needed to kind of get some kind of up to the moment thing that's happening at Stanford, the places where you don't get to do that are service level jobs. And so this is where I'm worried about, yes, kids might be getting particularly pernicious information and behaviors from cell phones, but the phone isn't the problem. It's our socialization around the phone that's the problem. And so when we ban them outright, we're sending a particularly powerful message that this is how we value your interaction with these devices in schools. The other side of this, though, I think is, you know, I read some of the coverage of why LAUSD decided to ban devices, I think starting in January, right?
Yeah.
And it talks about, you know, kids walking down the hall and just kind of staring at their phones. And to me, right, that is either kids being deeply social in ways that just don't look like what adults think social looks like today, or it's kids who are being deeply literate in ways that we don't count as being literate. And so as much as we might kind of look down on these kids these days and how much they're not engaged, this is probably one of the most literate generations of young people we've ever encountered, that in their spare time, they're willfully reading complex multimodal texts all of the time, producing them, engaging with them. And so to just ban those outright is to ban the place where young people are learning, the places where they're making powerful civic connections with one another, and the places where they might be building up other kinds of identities that schools oftentimes don't value.
With these cell phone bans, what do you think is the problem that they're really trying to solve? Because I've heard, you know, cyberbullying and mental health. I've heard distraction and poor performance in the classroom. Like, what's the real problem here?
Before I will answer your question. So this isn't a dodge, but I will say we should definitely address things like bullying and mental health. Those seem really great to address. I think banning cell phones is not the way to do that. So I just want to be clear on a sense there.
You're not pro bullying.
Let the record state, not pro bullying. You know, I think based on my own, again, like going back to my own time in classrooms with cell phones and kind of thinking about where the conversation is, I really think at the end of the day, this is an issue about power and attention for young people, right? When young people are looking at their cell phone and not putting their eyes on what the teacher is doing and on a expected curriculum, that is about teachers not feeling like young people are particularly engaged in their classrooms. And maybe that is some kind of reflection on the ways we've been teaching, the kinds of content that we've been teaching in classrooms for the past century. Our curriculum hasn't changed all that much. And if we think about the kinds of democratic crises that our country is facing, if we think about the kind of climate catastrophes that we're facing right now, we're probably overdue for a large overhaul of what young people are learning in classrooms and probably how they're learning as well, right? And so to me, when we talk about why young people are no longer being allowed to use cell phones in classrooms, this is about a shift in power and authority, right? Are young people paying attention to adults? And if not, we're going to take away the thing that is drawing your attention away from us. I think that's a central part of what's happening here.
I come from a family of educators. My mom retired last year as a middle school teacher. My sister teaches elementary school now. I know my mom was a middle school teacher, which in my opinion is like Purple Heart kind of territory because, wow, is that rough. But, you know, the stories that I have heard about like student behavior in the classroom and the stunts that students pull and the things they get away with, I mean, they don't always involve a smartphone, sure, but like I think it speaks to the fact that teachers can only do so much policing of student behavior. And so I can see maybe an argument that removing these devices helps in that regard. Do you see any validity to that?
My mom was also a middle school teacher. And so I agree with the, like, give all middle school teachers a Purple Heart, I think is a good stance
completely.
To have. I think there's a short-term solution that, yes, if we're to ban all cell phones, you probably no longer have them distracted by them in the way that we think of. But I think we tend to not recognize, I think, how ingenious young people are. And let me give a couple of examples of what this looks like. So LESD, again, a decade ago, around the time that we would be having this conversation, they gave every student iPads at the time, right, as a way to kind of think of moving towards this one-to-one. They spent, you know, I think $1 billion on this initiative to give every student an iPad, overpaid for the iPads. They were giving students an iPad that they paid more than the sticker price for an iPad because they loaded them up with testing software and tried to lock them down so kids could only use them for academic features. It took kids a week to get past all of those security features and actually use iPads for what they wanted to use them for.
Right.
And so I want to recognize that kind of ingenuity, right? And so if we take away this, it's not like young people have other alternatives, right? They're going to have other kinds of electronic devices with them. They will go old school and God forbid, pass around notes to one another.
Right.
Right. The kinds of things that we're imagining, you're not going to fix cyberbullying. You're not going to fix bullying by taking away their phones, right? It's going to happen in other spaces. And what better way to learn, I think, then to think meaningfully about how am I going to learn to socialize with a phone with a powerful mentor supporting me in that process, right? I think the reason we're in this mess is we came of age, I think, in a place where young people were learning how to use cell phones at the same place that adults had no idea how to use cell phones meaningfully, right? Every once in a while, my wife will remind me at the table to put away my phone when we're eating dinner because I have bad habits, I think, just like many other people do.
Right.
And so we're in this place where the adults don't have good habits, young people don't have good habits, and we need to kind of figure out, how are we going to support one another? How are we going to not just kind of, you know, pass the buck to the next generation around this same issue?
Have you come up with an answer or a fix to that then that isn't just take away their phones?
It's not a particularly creative answer, but the answer is supporting and building trusting relationships between young people and their teachers. That probably involves things like better compensating teachers around professional development to think through what the strategies might look like in their classrooms. It might mean reducing classroom sizes and really kind of carving out spaces for learning about things like media literacy, online civic reasoning, and building up places where young people can use their phones in ways that are experimenting with what it looks like in their classrooms. In my own work, I was able to see students flourish when they're able to use their cell phones to text me their homework at the time, take pictures of the screen, right, for different kinds of activities. You know, I think there's a lot of affordances that look like small tweaks, but then allows young people to feel empowered by what they're able to do in classrooms rather than being told what they're not able to do.
A couple of questions that to me come up are just around the practicalities. Like, how do you actually take students' phones and keep them off them in a reasonable way? Have you seen any examples that actually work if that is the goal?
I've seen examples that have given a lot of public school dollars to private companies, right? There's like the Yonder pouches that you kind of lock kids' phones up.
Right.
Or you see these at concerts, right, where you kind of willingly put your phone in this pouch and then you can get it at the end of school or at the end of a performance, right? I'm sure someone made a lot of money off of that and it wasn't teachers. New York City had bans for a long time in the 2010s, and they basically had these little cars that kind of look like ice cream trucks. And kids would, you know, spend a couple of dollars and they would check in their phone and this big truck would keep it charged for them. And at the end of school, they would get it back. And again, right, like this is a small economy that basically profited off of young people not being allowed to take their phones into schools in New York. So there's lots of alternatives that look like that. And so, sure, we can have a place where you turn in your phone, or we can confiscate them and take them away, and we can invest in software to, you know, lock down people's devices.
The other factor that came to my mind immediately, frankly, was not just teachers, not just students, but we know that parents have a lot of influence and sway, right? And in the event of some sort of emergency, be it a natural disaster, you know, God forbid a school shooting, right? Parents not being able to reach their kids in that moment, in my mind, would like send all of these policies crumbling very quickly. And so I wonder if you see it that way, or if that's another obstacle here that would be challenging to overcome.
I guess it's a good thing we don't live in a country that doesn't have like a mass shooting crisis unfolding in front of us for the past several decades, right? So good thing we don't need to worry about that
right
here. It is morbid to have to joke about this, right? But I think that is an absolute...
It's a real concern, yeah.
I think to your point of parents being absolutely unwilling to allow this to happen, right? I think there's going to be a real class divide of who will allow the young people. And again, I think it's the same work. There will be a working class and a college-educated white divide of who's going to allow young kids to have cell phones, who's going to have some kind of special permission or a doctor's note or whatever the ways we find loopholes to allow certain kids to have cell phones and not in their school because of whatever the reasons are. And, you know, I think some of my work over the last couple of years has been on school buses and thinking about school buses as technology. There's a parallel here in my head around how we think about cell phones as technology and how we think of school buses as technology. And there was a recent survey that showed that school bus riding has declined post-pandemic for college-educated families, right? That after the pandemic, they just don't feel like it's worth the risk of sending kids on school buses. They'd rather take the time to commute and drop their kids off. But that has not been a decline for working-class families that still rely on this infrastructure, right? And I think there's probably a similar kind of parallel to think through who's willing to put their trust in teachers and who's willing to make sure that they have some kind of lifeline to their kids at all times. And it's not because one family values their kids more than another, but I think because we know of the ways we have access to loopholes and workarounds and not taking a yes or a no or a ban for granted.
One last question for you, and that's just, I'm curious where you see then this issue headed, because it right now the trend line seems to be more schools moving toward these bans. I imagine we'll see policies like this enacted.
Yep.
What happens then?
I don't think the ban will be that effective, will be my kind of basic guess of what will happen. And as a result, I look forward to talking to you about this in a couple of years from now when I think we have this conversation again. I think this conversation happens every year. The only thing striking to me is I can't believe that this research that I collected in 2010 is basically the same conversation, right? We're still going to have this over and over again unless we actively work to transform what's happening in schools. I think that'd be my basic guess of where we're headed.
Got it. Well, listen, this has been great conversation. Thanks for joining us on Politico Tech.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. I'm Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.